how unfit I was to be clothed in white when my hands were so filthy. Everyone else was thinking it. They had to be. Every step was too fast, propelling me toward the dais and Tamlin, and toward Ianthe, clothed in dark blue robes tonight, beaming beneath that hood and silver crown. As if I were good. As if I hadn't murdered two of their kind. I was a murderer and a liar. A cluster of red petals loomed ahead, just like that Fey youth's blood had pooled at my feet. 10 steps from the dais, at the edge of that splatter of red, I slowed, then stopped. Everyone was watching, exactly as they had when I'd nearly died, spectators to my torment. Tamlin extended a broad hand, brows narrowing slightly. My heart beat so fast, too fast. I was going to vomit, right over those rose petals, right over the grass and ribbons trailing into the aisle from the chairs flanking it. And between my skin and bones, something thrummed and pounded, rising and pushing, lashing through my blood. So many eyes, too many eyes, pressed on me, witness to every crime I'd committed, every humiliation. I don't know why I'd even bothered to wear gloves, why I'd let Ianthe convince me. The fading sun was too hot, the garden too hedged in, as inescapable as the vow I was about to make, binding me to him forever, shackling him to my broken and weary soul. The thing inside me was roiling now, my body shaking with the building force of it, as it hunted for a way out. Forever. I would never get better, never get free of myself, of that dungeon where I'd spent 3 months.
Feyre,
Tamlin said, his hand steady as he continued to reach for mine. The sun sank past the lip of the western garden wall, shadows pooled, chilling the air. If I turned away, they'd start talking, but I couldn't make the last few steps. Couldn't. I was going to fall apart right there, right then, and they'd see how precisely ruined I was. Help me. Help me. Help me, I begged someone, anyone, begged Lucian, standing in the front row, his metal eye fixed on me, begged Ianthe, face serene and patient and lovely within that hood. Save me, please, save me, get me out, end this. Tamlin took a step toward me, concern shading those eyes. I retreated a step. No. Tamlin's mouth tightened, the crowd murmured, silk streamers laden with globes of gold phalite twinkled into life above and around us. Ianthe said smoothly, Come, bride, and be joined with your true love. Come, bride, and let good triumph at last. Good. I was not good. I was nothing, and my soul, my eternal soul, was damned. I tried to get my traitorous lungs to draw air so I could voice the word, no, no. But I didn't have to say it. Thunder cracked behind me, as if two boulders had been hurled against each other. People screamed, falling back, a few vanishing outright as darkness erupted. I whirled, and through the night drifting away like smoke on a wind, I found Rhysand straightening the lapels of his black jacket. Hello, Feyre darling. He purred. Chapter 5. I shouldn't have been surprised, not when Rhysand liked to make a spectacle of everything, and found pissing off Tamlin to be an art form. But there he was. Rhysand, High Lord of the Night Court, now stood beside me, darkness leaking from him like ink in water. He angled his head, his blue-black hair shifting with the movement. Those violet eyes sparkled in the golden phalite as they fixed on Tamlin, as he held up a hand to where Tamlin and Lucian and their sentries had their swords half-drawn, sizing up how to get me out of the way, how to bring him down. But at the lift of that hand, they froze. Ianthe, however, was backing away slowly, face drained of color. What a pretty little wedding. Rhysand said, stuffing his hands into his pockets, as those many swords remained in their sheaths. The remaining crowd was pressing back, some climbing over seats to get away. Rhys looked me over slowly and clicked his tongue at my silk gloves. Whatever had been building beneath my skin went still and cold.
Get the hell out,
growled Tamlin, stalking toward us, claws ripped from his knuckles. Rhys clicked his tongue again.
Oh, I don't think so. Not when I need to call in my bargain with Feyre, darling.
My stomach hollowed out. No, no, not now.
You try to break the bargain, and you know what will happen.
Rhys went on, chuckling a bit at the crowd still falling over themselves to get away from him. He jerked his chin toward me.
I gave you 3 months of freedom. You could at least look happy to see me.
I was shaking too badly to say anything. Rhys's eyes flickered with distaste. The expression was gone when he faced Tamlin again.
I'll be taking her now.
Don't you dare, Tamlin snarled. Behind him, the dais was empty. Ianthe had vanished entirely, along with most of those in attendance.
Was I interrupting? I thought it was over.
Rhys gave me a smile dripping with venom. He knew. Through that bond, through whatever magic was between us, he'd known I was about to say no.
At least, Feyre seemed to think so.
Tamlin snarled.
Let us finish the ceremony.
Your High Priestess, Rhys said, seems to think it's over too.
Tamlin stiffened as he looked over a shoulder to find the altar empty. When he faced us again, the claws had eased halfway back into his hands.
Rhysand. I'm in no mood to bargain, Rhys said, even though I could work it to my advantage, I'm sure.
I jolted at the caress of his hand on my elbow.
Let's go.
I didn't move. Tamlin, I breathed. Tamlin took a single step toward me, his golden face turning sallow, but remained focused on Rhys.
Name your price.
Don't bother, Rhys crooned, linking elbows with me. Every spot of contact was abhorrent, unbearable. He'd take me back to the Night Court, the place Amarantha had supposedly modeled under the mountain after, full of depravity and torture and death.
Tamlin, please. Such dramatics, Rhysand said, tugging me closer.
But Tamlin didn't move, and those claws were wholly replaced by smooth skin. He fixed his gaze on Rhys, his lips pulling back in a snarl.
If you hurt her.
I know, Rhysand drawled. I'll return her in a week.
No, no, Tamlin couldn't be making those kinds of threats, not when they meant he was letting me go. Even Lucien was gaping at Tamlin, his face white with fury and shock. Rhys released my elbow only to slip a hand around my waist, pressing me into his side as he whispered in my ear. Hold on. Then darkness roared, a wind tearing me this way and that, the ground falling away beneath me, the world gone around me. Only Rhys remained, and I hated him as I clung to him. I hated him with my entire heart. Then the darkness vanished. I smelled jasmine first, then saw stars, a sea of stars flickering beyond glowing pillars of moonstone that framed the sweeping view of endless snow-capped mountains.
Welcome to the Night Court,
was all Rhys said. It was the most beautiful place I'd ever seen. Whatever building we were in had been perched atop one of the gray-stoned mountains. The hall around us was open to the elements, no windows to be found, just towering pillars and gossamer curtains, swaying in that jasmine-scented breeze. It must be some magic to keep the air warm in the dead of winter, not to mention the altitude, or the snow coating the mountains, mighty winds sending veils of it drifting off the peaks like wandering mist. Little seating, dining, and work areas dotted the hall, sectioned off with those curtains or lush plants or thick rugs scattered over the moonstone floor. A few balls of light bobbed on the breeze, along with colored glass lanterns dangling from the arches of the ceiling. Not a scream, not a shout, not a plea to be heard. Behind me, a wall of white marble arose, broken occasionally by open doorways leading into dim stairwells. The rest of the Night Court had to be through there. No wonder I couldn't hear anyone screaming if they were all inside.
This is my private residence, Rhys said casually.
His skin was darker than I'd remembered, golden now, rather than pale. Pale from being locked under the mountain for 50 years. I scanned him, searching for any sign of the massive membranous wings, the ones he'd admitted he loved flying with. But there was none.
just the male smirking at me, and that too familiar expression. How dare you? Rhys snorted. I certainly missed that look on your face. He stalked closer, his movements feline, those violet eyes turning subdued, lethal. You're welcome, you know. For what? Rhys paused less than a foot away, sliding his hands into his pockets. The night didn't seem to ripple from him here, and he appeared, despite his perfection, almost normal.
For saving you when you asked.
I stiffened. I didn't ask for anything. His stare dipped to my left hand. Rhys gave no warning as he gripped my arm, snarling softly, and tore off the glove. His touch was like a brand, and I flinched, yielding a step, but he held firm until he'd gotten both gloves off.
I heard you begging someone, anyone, to rescue you, to get you out. I heard you say no.
I didn't say anything. He turned my bare hand over, his hold tightening as he examined the eye he'd tattooed. He tapped the pupil, once, twice.
I heard it loud and clear.
I wrenched my hand away. Take me back, now. I didn't want to be stolen away. He shrugged.
What better time to take you here? Maybe Tamlin didn't notice you were about to reject him in front of his entire court. Maybe now you can simply blame it on me.
You're a bastard. You made it clear enough that I had reservations.
Such gratitude, as always.
I struggled to get down a single deep breath. What do you want from me?
Want? I want you to say thank you, first of all. Then I want you to take off that hideous dress. You look...
His mouth cut a cruel line.
You look exactly like the doe-eyed damsel he and that simpering priestess want you to be.
You don't know anything about me, or us. Rhys gave me a knowing smile.
Does Tamlin? Does he ever ask why you hurl your guts up every night, or why you can't go into certain rooms or see certain colors?
I froze. He might as well have stripped me naked.
Get the hell out of my head!
Tamlin had horrors of his own to endure, to face down.
Likewise.
He stalked a few steps away.
You think I enjoy being awoken every night by visions of you puking? You send everything right down that bond, and I don't appreciate having a front row seat when I'm trying to sleep.
Prick! Another chuckle, but I wouldn't ask about what he meant, about the bond between us. I wouldn't give him the satisfaction of looking curious.
As for what else I want from you,
he gestured to the house behind us. I'll tell you tomorrow at breakfast.
For now, clean yourself up. Rest.
That rage flickered in his eyes again at the dress, the hair.
Take the stairs on the right, one level down. Your room is the first door.
Not a dungeon cell? Perhaps it was foolish to reveal that fear, to suggest it to him. But Rhys half turned, brows lifting.
You are not a prisoner, Feyre. You made a bargain, and I am calling it in. You will be my guest here, with the privileges of a member of my household. None of my subjects are going to touch you, hurt you, or so much as think ill of you here.
My tongue was dry and heavy, as I said. And where might those subjects be?
Some dwell here, in the mountain beneath us.
He angled his head.
They're forbidden to set foot in this residence. They know they'd be signing their death warrant.
His eyes met mine, stark and clear, as if he could sense the panic, the shadows creeping in.
Amarantha wasn't very creative,
he said with quiet wrath.
My court beneath this mountain has long been feared, and she chose to replicate it by violating the space of Prithian's sacred mountain. So yes, there's a court beneath this mountain, the court your Tamlin now expects me to be subjecting you to. I preside over it every now and then, but it mostly rules itself.
When are you taking me there? If I had to go underground, had to see those kinds of horrors again, I'd beg him not to take me. I didn't care how pathetic it made me. I'd lost any sort of qualms about what lines I'd crossed to survive.
I'm not.
He rolled his shoulders.
This is my home, and the court beneath it is my occupation, as you mortals call it.
I do not like for the two to overlap very often.
My brows rose slightly.
You mortals?
Starlight danced along the planes of his face.
Should I consider you something different?
A challenge. I shoved away my irritation at the amusement again tugging at the corners of his lips, and instead said, And the other denizens of your court?
The Night Court territory was enormous, bigger than any other in Prithian, and all around us were those empty, snow-blasted mountains, no signs of towns, cities, or anything.
Scattered throughout, dwelling as they wish, just as you are now free to roam where you wish.
I wish to roam home. Rhys laughed, finally sauntering toward the other end of the hall, which ended in a veranda open to the stars.
I'm willing to accept your thanks at any time, you know,
he called to me without looking back. Red exploded in my vision, and I couldn't breathe fast enough, couldn't think above the roar in my head. One heartbeat I was staring after him, the next I had my shoe in a hand. I hurled it at him with all my strength, all my considerable immortal strength. I barely saw my silk slipper as it flew through the air, fast as a shooting star, so fast that even a High Lord couldn't detect it as it neared and slammed into his head.
Rhys whirled, a hand rising to the back of his head, his eyes wide. I already had the other shoe in my hand. Rhys's lip pulled back from his teeth.
I dare you.
Temper. He had to be in some mood today to let his temper show this much. Good. That made two of us. I flung my other shoe right at his head, as swift and hard as the first one. His hand snatched up, grabbing the shoe mere inches from his face. Rhys hissed and lowered the shoe, his eyes meeting mine as the silk dissolved to glittering black dust in his fist. His fingers unfurled, the last of the sparkling ashes blowing into oblivion, and he surveyed my hand, my body, my face.
Interesting.
He murmured, and continued on his way. I debated tackling him and pummeling that face with my fists, but I wasn't stupid. I was in his home, on top of a mountain in the middle of absolutely nowhere, it seemed. No one would be coming to rescue me. No one was even here to witness my screaming. So I turned toward the doorway he'd indicated, heading for the dim stairwell beyond. I'd nearly reached it, not daring to breathe too loudly. When a bright, amused female voice said behind me, far away from wherever Rhys had gone to at the opposite end of the hall,
So that went well.
Rhys's answering snarl sent my footsteps hurrying. My room was a dream. After scouring it for any sign of danger, after learning every exit and entrance and hiding place, I paused in the center to contemplate where exactly I'd be staying for the next week. Like the upstairs living area, its windows were open to the brutal world beyond. No glass, no shutters, and sheer amethyst curtains fluttered in that unnatural soft breeze. The large bed was a creamy white and ivory concoction, with pillows and blankets and throws for days, made more inviting by the twin golden lamps beside it. An armoire and dressing table occupied a wall, framed by those glassless windows. Across the room, a chamber with a porcelain sink and toilet lay behind an arched wooden door. But the bath. Occupying the other half of the bedroom, my bathtub was actually a pool, hanging right off the mountain itself, a pool for soaking or enjoying myself. Its far edge seemed to disappear into nothing, the water flowing silently off the side and into the night beyond. A narrow ledge on the adjacent wall was lined with fat, guttering candles, whose glow gilded the dark, glassy surface and wafting tendrils of steam. Open, airy, plush, and calm. This room was fit for an empress, with the marble floors, silks, velvets, and elegant details. Only an empress could have afforded it. I tried not to think what Rhys's chamber was like, if this was how he treated his guests. Guest, not prisoner. Well, the room proved it. I didn't bother barricading the door. Rhys could likely fly in if he felt like it, and I'd seen him shatter a fairy's mind without so much as blinking. I doubted a bit of wood would keep out that horrible power.
I again surveyed the room, my wedding gown hissing on the warm marble floors. I peered down at myself. You look ridiculous. Heat itched along my cheeks and neck. It didn't excuse what he'd done, even if he'd saved me, I choked on the word, from having to refuse Tamlin, having to explain. Slowly, I tugged the pins and baubles from my curled hair, piling them onto the dressing table. The sight was enough for me to grit my teeth, and I swept them into an empty drawer instead, slamming it shut so hard the mirror above the table rattled. I rubbed at my scalp, aching from the weight of the curls and prodding pins. This afternoon, I'd imagined Tamlin pulling them each from my hair, a kiss for every pin. But now, I swallowed against the burning in my throat. Reese was the least of my concerns. Tamlin had seen the hesitation, but had he understood that I was about to say no? Had Ianthe? I had to tell him, had to explain that there couldn't be a wedding, not for a while yet. Maybe I'd wait until the mating bond snapped into place, until I knew for sure that it couldn't be some mistake, that I was worthy of him. Maybe wait until he, too, had faced the nightmares stalking him, relaxed his grip on things a bit, on me. Even if I understood his need to protect, that fear of losing me, perhaps I should explain everything when I returned. But so many people had seen it, seen me hesitate. My lower lip trembled, and I began unbuttoning my gown, then tugged it off my shoulders. I let it slide to the ground in a sigh of silk and tulle and beading, a deflated souffle on the marble floor, and took a large step out of it. Even my undergarments were ridiculous, frothy scraps of lace intended solely for Tamlin to admire and then tear into ribbons. I snatched up the gown, storming to the armoire and shoving it inside. Then I stripped off the undergarments and chucked them in as well. My tattoo was stark against the pile of white silk and lace. My breath came faster and faster. I didn't realize I was weeping until I grabbed the first bit of fabric within the armoire I could find, a set of turquoise nightclothes, and shoved my feet into the ankle-length pants, then pulled the short-sleeved matching shirt over my head, the hem grazing the top of my navel. I didn't care that it had to be some night court fashion, didn't care that they were soft and warm. I climbed into that big, fluffy bed, the sheets smooth and welcoming, and could barely draw a steady breath enough to blow out the lamps on either side. But as soon as darkness enveloped the room, my sobs hit in full, great gasping pants that shuddered through me, flowing out the open windows and into the starry, snow-kissed night. Reese hadn't been lying when he said I was to join him for breakfast. My old handmaidens from under the mountain appeared at my door just past dawn, and I might not have recognized the pretty, dark-haired twins had they not acted like they knew me. I had never seen them as anything but shadows, their faces always concealed in impenetrable night. But here, or perhaps without Amarantha, they were fully corporeal. Nuala and Caradwyn were their names, and I wondered if they'd ever told me, if I'd been too far gone under the mountain to even care. Their gentle knock hurled me awake, not that I'd slept much during the night. For a heartbeat, I wondered why my bed felt so much softer, why mountains flowed into the distance and not spring grasses and hills. And then it all poured back in, along with a throbbing, relentless headache. After the second, patient knock, followed by a muffled explanation through the door of who they were, I scrambled out of bed to let them in. And after a miserably awkward greeting, they informed me that breakfast would be served in 30 minutes, and I was to bathe and dress. I didn't bother to ask if Reese was behind that last order, or if it was their recommendation based on how grim I no doubt looked. But they laid out some clothes on the bed before leaving me to wash in private. I was tempted to linger in the luxurious heat of the bathtub for the rest of the day, but a faint, endlessly amused tug cleaved through my headache. I knew that tug, had been called by it once before, in those hours after Amarantha's downfall. I ducked to my neck in the water, scanning the clear winter sky, the fierce wind whipping the snow off those nearby peaks. No sign of him, no pound of beating wings. But the tug yanked again in my mind, my gut, a summoning, like some servant's bell. Cursing him soundly, I scrubbed myself down and dressed in the clothes they'd left. And now, striding across the sunny upper level as I blindly followed the source of that insufferable tug, my magenta silk shoes near silent on the moonstone floors, I wanted to shred the clothes off me, if only for the fact that they belonged to this place, to him. My high-waisted peach pants were loose and billowing, gathered at the ankles with velvet cuffs of bright gold. The long sleeves of the matching top were made of gossamer, also gathered at the wrists, and the top itself hung just to my navel, revealing a sliver of skin as I walked. Comfortable, easy to move in, to run. Feminine, exotic, thin enough that, unless Rhysand planned to torment me by casting me into the winter wasteland around us, I could assume I wasn't leaving the borders of whatever warming magic kept the palace so balmy. At least the tattoo, visible through the sheer sleeve, wouldn't be out of place here. But the clothes were still a part of this court, and no doubt part of some game he intended to play with me. At the very end of the upper level, a small glass table gleamed like quicksilver in the heart of a stone veranda, set with three chairs and laden with fruits, juices, pastries, and breakfast meats. And in one of those chairs, though Rhys stared out at the sweeping view, the snowy mountains near blinding in the sunlight, I knew he'd sensed my arrival from the moment I cleared the stairwell at the other side of the hall. Maybe since I'd awoken, if that tug was any indication. I paused between the last two pillars, studying the High Lord lounging at the breakfast table and the view he surveyed. "I'm not a dog to be summoned," I said by way of greeting. Slowly, Rhys looked over his shoulder. Those violet eyes were vibrant in the light, and I curled my fingers into fists as they swept from my head to my toes and back up again. He frowned at whatever he found lacking. "I didn't want you to get lost," he said blandly. My head throbbed, and I eyed the silver teapot steaming in the center of the table. A cup of tea. "I thought it'd always be dark here," I said, if only to not look quite as desperate for that life-giving tea so early in the morning.
"We're one of the three solar courts," he said, motioning for me to sit with a graceful twist of his wrist. "Our nights are far more beautiful, and our sunsets and dawns are exquisite. But we do adhere to the laws of nature."
I slid into the upholstered chair across from him. His tunic was unbuttoned at the neck, revealing a hint of the tanned chest beneath. "And do the other courts choose not to?"
"The nature of the seasonal courts," he said, "is linked to their high lords, whose magic and will keeps them in eternal spring, or winter, or fall, or summer. It has always been like that, some sort of strange stagnation. But the solar courts, day, dawn, and night, are of a more symbolic nature. We might be powerful, but even we cannot alter the sun's path or strength. Tea?"
The sunlight danced along the curve of the silver teapot. I kept my eager nod to a restrained dip of my chin.
"But you will find," Rhysand went on, pouring a cup for me, "that our nights are more spectacular. So spectacular that some in my territory even awaken at sunset and go to bed at dawn, just to live under the starlight."
I splashed some milk in the tea, watching the light and dark eddy together. "Why is it so warm in here, when winter is in full blast out there?"
"Magic."
"Obviously." I set down my teaspoon and sipped, nearly sighing at the rush of heat and smoky, rich flavor. "But why?" Rhys scanned the wind tearing through the peaks.
"You heat a house in the winter. Why shouldn't I heat this place as well? I'll admit I don't know why my predecessors built a palace fit for the summer court in the middle of a mountain range that's mildly warm at best. But who am I to question?"
I took a few more sips, that headache already lessening, and dared to scoop some fruit onto my plate from a glass bowl nearby. He watched every movement. Then he said quietly,
"You've lost weight."
You're prone to digging through my head whenever you please, I said, stabbing a piece of melon with my fork. I don't see why you're surprised by it.
His gaze didn't lighten, though that smile again played about his sensuous mouth, no doubt his favorite mask.
Only occasionally will I do that, and I can't help it if you send things down the bond.
I contemplated refusing to ask as I had done last night, but how does it work, this bond that allows you to see into my head?
He sipped from his own tea.
Think of the bargain's bond as a bridge between us, and at either end is a door to our respective minds, a shield. My innate talents allow me to slip through the mental shields of anyone I wish, with or without that bridge, unless they're very, very strong, or have trained extensively to keep those shields tight. As a human, the gates to your mind were flung open for me to stroll through. As Fae,
a little shrug.
Sometimes you unwittingly have a shield up. Sometimes, when emotion seems to be running strong, that shield vanishes. And sometimes, when those shields are open, you might as well be standing at the gates to your mind, shouting your thoughts across the bridge to me. Sometimes I hear them, sometimes I don't.
I scowled, clenching my fork harder. And how often do you just rifle through my mind when my shields are down?
All amusement faded from his face.
When I can't tell if your nightmares are real threats or imagined. When you're about to be married and you silently beg anyone to help you. Only when you drop your mental shields and unknowingly blast those things down the bridge. And to answer your question before you ask, yes, even with your shields up, I could get through them if I wished. You could train, though. Learn how to shield against someone like me, even with the bond bridging our minds and my own abilities.
I ignored the offer. Agreeing to do anything with him felt too permanent, too accepting of the bargain between us. What do you want with me? You said you'd tell me here, so tell me.
Rhys leaned back in his chair, folding powerful arms that even the fine clothes couldn't hide.
For this week, I want you to learn how to read.
Chapter 6. Rhysand had mocked me about it once, had asked me while we were under the mountain if forcing me to learn how to read would be my personal idea of torture. No, thank you, I said, gripping my fork to keep from chucking it at his head.
You're going to be a High Lord's wife, Rhys said. You'll be expected to maintain your own correspondences, perhaps even give a speech or two. And the cauldron knows what else he and Ianthe will deem appropriate for you. Make menus for dinner parties, write thank you letters for all those wedding gifts, embroider sweet phrases on pillows. It's a necessary skill. And you know what? Why don't we throw in shielding while we're at it? Reading and shielding. Fortunately, you can practice them together.
They are both necessary skills, I said through my teeth, but you are not going to teach me.
What else are you going to do with yourself? Paint? How's that going these days, Feyre?
What the hell does it even matter to you?
It serves various purposes of mine, of course.
What purposes?
You'll have to agree to work with me to find out, I'm afraid.
Something sharp poked into my hand. I'd folded the fork into a tangle of metal. When I set it down on the table, Rhys chuckled.
Interesting.
You said that last night.
Am I not allowed to say it twice?
That's not what I was implying, and you know it. His gaze raked over me again, as if he could see beneath the peach fabric, through the skin, to the shredded soul beneath. Then it drifted to the mangled fork.
Has anyone ever told you that you're rather strong for a high fae?
Am I?
I'll take that as a no.
He popped a piece of melon into his mouth.
Have you tested yourself against anyone?
Why would I? I was enough of a wreck as it was.
Because you were resurrected and reborn by the combined powers of the seven High Lords. If I were you, I'd be curious to see if anything else transferred to me during that process.
My blood chilled. Nothing else transferred to me.
It'd just be rather interesting,
He smirked at the word.
If it did.
It didn't, and I'm not going to learn to read or shield with you.
Why? From spite. I thought you and I got past that under the mountain.
Don't get me started on what you did to me under the mountain. Rhys went still. As still as I'd ever seen him. As still as the death now beckoning in those eyes. Then his chest began to move, faster and faster. Across the pillars towering behind him, I could have sworn the shadow of great wings spread. He opened his mouth, leaning forward, and then stopped. Instantly, the shadows, the ragged breathing, the intensity were gone, the lazy grin returning.
We have company. We'll discuss this later.
No, we won't. But quick, light footsteps sounded down the hall, and then she appeared. If Rhysand was the most beautiful male I'd ever seen, she was his female equivalent. Her bright golden hair was tied back in a casual braid, and the turquoise of her clothes, fashioned like my own, offset her sun-kissed skin, making her practically glow in the morning light. Hello, hello, she chirped, her full lips parting in a dazzling smile as her rich brown eyes fixed on me.
Feyre, Rhys said smoothly, meet my cousin Morrigan. More, meet the lovely, charming, and open-minded Feyre.
I debated splashing my tea in his face, but Moore strode toward me. Each step was assured and steady, graceful and grounded. Merry but alert, someone who didn't need weapons, or at least bother to sheathe them at her side. I've heard so much about you, she said, and I got to my feet, awkwardly jutting out my hand. She ignored it and grabbed me into a bone-crushing hug. She smelled like citrus and cinnamon. I tried to relax my taut muscles as she pulled away and grinned rather fiendishly. You look like you were getting under Rhys's skin, she said, strutting to her seat between us. Good thing I came along, though I'd enjoy seeing Rhys's balls nailed to the wall. Rhys slid incredulous eyes at her, his brows lifting. I hid the smile that tugged on my lips. It's nice to meet you, liar. Moore said, pouring herself some tea and loading her plate. You want nothing to do with us, do you? And wicked Rhys is making you sit here.
You're perky today, Moore, Rhys said.
Moore's stunning eyes lifted to her cousin's face. Forgive me for being excited about having company, for once.
You could be attending your own duties, he said testily.
I clamped my lips tighter together. I'd never seen Rhys irked. I needed a break, and you told me to come here whenever I liked. So, what better time than now, when you brought my new friend to finally meet me? I blinked, realizing two things at once. One, she actually meant what she said. Two, hers was the female voice I'd heard speak last night, mocking Rhys for our squabble. So, that went well, she'd teased. As if there were any other alternative, any chance of pleasantness where he and I were concerned. A new fork had appeared beside my plate, and I picked it up, only to spear a piece of melon. You two look nothing alike, I said at last.
Moore is my cousin in the loosest definition, he said.
She grinned at him, devouring slices of tomato and pale cheese.
But we were raised together. She's my only surviving family.
I didn't have the nerve to ask what happened to everyone else, or remind myself whose father was responsible for the lack of family at my own court.
And as my only remaining relative, Rhys went on, Moore believes she is entitled to breeze in and out of my life as she sees fit.
So grumpy this morning, Moore said, plopping two muffins onto her plate. I didn't see you under the mountain, I found myself saying, hating those last three words more than anything. Oh, I wasn't there, she said. I was in-
Enough, Moore, he said,
his voice laced with quiet thunder. It was a trial in itself not to sit up at the interruption, not to study them too closely. Rhysand set his napkin on the table and rose.
Moore will be here for the rest of the week, but by all means, do not feel that you have to oblige her with your presence.
Moore stuck out her tongue at him. He rolled his eyes, the most human gesture I'd ever seen him make. He examined my plate.
Did you eat enough?
I nodded,
Good. Then let's go.
He inclined his head toward the pillars and swaying curtains behind him.
Your first lesson awaits.
Moore sliced one of the muffins in two in a steady sweep of her knife. The angle of her fingers, her wrist, indeed confirmed my suspicions that weapons weren't at all foreign to her. If he pisses you off, Feyre, feel free to shove him over the rail of the nearest balcony. Rhys gave her a smooth, filthy gesture as he strode down the hall. I eased to my feet when he was a good distance ahead. Enjoy your breakfast. Whenever you want company, she said as I edged around the table, give a shout. She probably meant that literally. I merely nodded and trailed after the High Lord. I agreed to sit at the long wooden table in a curtained-off alcove only because he had a point. Not being able to read had almost cost me my life under the mountain. I'd be damned if I let it become a weakness again, his personal agenda or no. And as for shielding, I'd be a damned fool not to take up the offer to learn from him. The thought of anyone, especially Rhys, sifting through the mess in my mind, taking information about the Spring Court, about the people I loved, I'd never allow it, not willingly. But it didn't make it any easier to endure Rhysand's presence at the wooden table, or the stack of books piled atop it. I know my alphabet, I said sharply, as he laid a piece of paper in front of me. I'm not that stupid. I twisted my fingers in my lap, then pinned my restless hands under my thighs.
I didn't say you were stupid, he said. I'm just trying to determine where we should begin.
I leaned back in the cushioned seat.
Since you've refused to tell me a thing about how much you know.
My face warmed. Can't you hire a tutor? He lifted a brow.
Is it that hard for you to even try in front of me?
You're a High Lord. Don't you have better things to do?
Of course, but none as enjoyable as seeing you squirm.
You're a real bastard, you know that? Rhys huffed a laugh.
I've been called worse. In fact, I think you've called me worse.
He tapped the paper in front of him.
Read that.
A blur of letters. My throat tightened. I can't.
Try.
The sentence had been written in elegant, concise print. His writing, no doubt. I tried to open my mouth, but my spine locked up. What exactly is your stake in all this? You said you'd tell me if I worked with you.
I didn't specify when I'd tell you.
I peeled back from him as my lip curled. He shrugged.
Maybe I resent the idea of you letting those sycophants and warmongering fools in the Spring Court make you feel inadequate. Maybe I indeed enjoy seeing you squirm. Or maybe...
I get it, Rhys snorted.
Try to read it, Feyre.
Prick. I snatched the paper to me, nearly ripping it in half in the process. I looked at the first word, sounding it out in my head. You... The next I figured out with a combination of my silent pronunciation and logic.
Look good,
he murmured. I didn't ask for your approval, Rhys chuckled. Absolutely. It took me longer than I wanted to admit to figure that out. The next word was even worse. I deigned to glance at him, brows raised.
Delicious,
he purred. My brows now knotted. I read the next two words, then whipped my face toward him. You look absolutely delicious today, Feyre. That's what you wrote? He leaned back in his seat. As our eyes met, sharp claws caressed my mind, and his voice whispered inside my head.
It's true, isn't it?
I jolted back, my chair groaning. Stop that! But those claws now dug in. And my entire body, my heart, my lungs, my blood yielded to his grip, utterly at his command as he said,
The fashion of the Night Court suits you.
I couldn't move in my seat, couldn't even blink.
This is what happens when you leave your mental shields down. Someone with my sort of powers could slip inside, see what they want, and take your mind for themselves, or they could shatter it. I'm currently standing on the threshold of your mind. But if I were to go deeper, all it would take would be half a thought from me, and who you are, your very self, would be wiped away.
Distantly, sweat slid down my temple.
You should be afraid. You should be afraid of this, and you should be thanking the God's damned cauldron that in the past 3 months, no one with my sort of gifts has run into you. Now shove me out.
I couldn't. Those claws were everywhere, digging into every thought, every piece of self. He pushed a little harder.
Shove me out.
I didn't know where to begin. I blindly pushed and slammed myself into him, into those claws that were everywhere, as if I were a top loosed in a circle of mirrors. His laughter, low and soft, filled my mind, my ears.
That way, Feyre.
In answer, a little open path gleamed inside my head. The road out. It'd take me forever to unhook each claw and shove the mass of his presence out that narrow opening. If I could wash it away... A wave of self, of me, to sweep all of him out. I didn't let him see the plan take form as I rallied myself into a cresting wave and struck. The claws loosened, reluctantly, as if letting me win this round. He merely said,
"Good."
My bones, my breath and blood, they were mine again. I slumped in my seat.
"Not yet," he said. "Shield, block me out so I can't get back in."
I already wanted to go somewhere quiet and sleep for a while. Claws at that outer layer of my mind, stroking. I imagined a wall of adamant snapping down, black as night and a foot thick. The claws retracted a breath before the wall sliced them in two. Rhys was grinning.
Very nice. Blunt, but nice.
I couldn't help myself. I grabbed the piece of paper and shredded it in two, then four.
You're a pig. Oh, most definitely. But look at you. You read that whole sentence, kicked me out of your mind, and shielded. Excellent work.
Don't condescend to me.
I'm not. You're reading at a level far higher than I anticipated.
That burning returned to my cheeks. But mostly illiterate.
At this point, it's about practice, spelling, and more practice. You could be reading novels by Ninsar. And if you keep adding to those shields, you might very well keep me out entirely by then, too.
Ninsar. It'd be the first Tamlin and his court would celebrate in nearly 50 years. Amarantha had banned it on a whim, along with a few other small but beloved Fey holidays that she had deemed unnecessary. But Ninsar was months from now. Is it even possible to truly keep you out?
Not likely. But who knows how deep that power goes? Keep practicing, and we'll see what happens.
And will I still be bound by this bargain at Ninsar, too? Silence. I pushed. After what happened? I couldn't mention specifics on what had occurred under the mountain, what he'd done for me during that fight with Amarantha, what he'd done after. I think we can agree that I owe you nothing, and you owe me nothing. His gaze was unflinching. I blazed on. Isn't it enough that we're all free? I splayed my tattooed hand on the table. By the end, I thought you were different, thought that it was all a mask. But taking me away, keeping me here? I shook my head, unable to find the words vicious enough, clever enough to convince him to end this bargain. His eyes darkened.
I'm not your enemy, Feyre.
Tamlin says you are. I curled the fingers of my tattooed hand into a fist. Everyone else says you are.
And what do you think?
He leaned back in his chair again, but his face was grave. You're doing a damned good job of making me agree with them.
Liar.
He purred.
Did you even tell your friends about what I did to you under the mountain?
So that comment at breakfast had gotten under his skin. I don't want to talk about anything related to that, with you or them.
No, because it's so much easier to pretend it never happened and let them coddle you.
I don't let them coddle me.
They had you wrapped up like a present yesterday, like you were his reward.
So?
So.
A flicker of rage, then it was gone. I'm ready to be taken home, I merely said.
Where you'll be cloistered for the rest of your life, especially once you start punching out heirs. I can't wait to see what Ianthe does when she gets her hands on them.
You don't seem to have a particularly high opinion of her. Something cold and predatory crept into his eyes.
No, I can't say that I do.
He pointed to a blank piece of paper.
Start copying the alphabet until your letters are perfect. And every time you get through a round, lower and raise your shield. Until that is second nature. I'll be back in an hour.
What?
Copy the alphabet until...
I heard what you said. Prick, 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 prick.
Then get to work.
Reese uncoiled to his feet.
And at least have the decency to only call me a prick when your shields are back up.
He vanished into a ripple of darkness before I realized that I'd let the wall of adamant fade again. By the time Reese returned, my mind felt like a mud puddle. I spent the entire hour doing as I'd been ordered, though I'd flinched at every sound from the nearby stairwell. Quiet steps of servants, the flapping of sheets being changed, someone humming a beautiful and winding melody. And beyond that, the chatter of birds that dwelled in the unnatural warmth of the mountain or in the many potted citrus trees. No sign of my impending torment, no sentries even to monitor me. I might as well have had the entire place to myself. Which was good, as my many attempts to lower and raise that mental shield often resulted in my face being twisted or strained or pinched.
Not bad,
Reese said, peering over my shoulder. He'd appeared moments before, a healthy distance away, and if I hadn't known better, I might have thought it was because he didn't want to startle me. As if he'd known about the time Tamlin had crept up behind me, and panic had hit me so hard I'd knocked him on his ass with a punch to his stomach. I'd blocked it out, the shock on Tam's face, how easy it had been to take him off his feet, the humiliation of having my stupid terror so out in the open. Reese scanned the pages I'd scribbled on, sorting through them, tracking my progress. Then, a scrape of claws inside my mind that only sliced against black, glittering adamant. I threw my lingering will into that wall as the claws pushed, testing for weak spots.
Well, well, Rhysand purred, those mental claws withdrawing. Hopefully I'll be getting a good night's rest at last, if you can manage to keep the wall up while you sleep.
I dropped the shield, sent a word blasting down that mental bridge between us, and hauled the walls back up. Behind it, my mind wobbled like jelly. I needed a nap, desperately.
Prick I might be, but look at you. Maybe we'll get to have some fun with our lessons after all.
I was still scowling at Reese's muscled back as I kept a healthy 10 steps behind him while he led me through the halls of the main building, the sweeping mountains and blisteringly blue sky the only witnesses to our silent trek. I was too drained to demand where we were now going, and he didn't bother explaining as he led me up, up, until we entered a round chamber at the top of a tower. A circular table of black stone occupied the center, while the largest stretch of uninterrupted gray stone wall was covered in a massive map of our world. It had been marked and flagged and pinned, for whatever reasons I couldn't tell. But my gaze drifted to the windows throughout the room, so many that it felt utterly exposed, breathable. The perfect home, I supposed, for a high lord blessed with wings. Reese stalked to the table, where there was another map spread, figurines dotting its surface. A map of Prithian and Highburn. Every court in our land had been marked, along with villages and cities and rivers and mountain passes. Every court, but the Night Court. The vast northern territory was utterly blank. Not even a mountain range had been etched in. Strange. Likely part of some strategy I didn't understand. I found Rhysand watching me, his raised brows enough to make me shut my mouth against the forming question.
Nothing to ask.
No. A feline smirk danced on his lips, but Rhys jerked his chin toward the map on the wall.
What do you see?
Is this some sort of way of convincing me to embrace my reading lessons? Indeed, I couldn't decipher any of the writing, only the shapes of things. Like the wall. Its massive line bisecting our world.
Tell me what you see.
A world divided in two.
And do you think it should remain that way?
I whipped my head toward him. My family.
I halted on the word. I should have known better than to admit to having a family, that I cared for them. Your human family,
Rhys finished,
would be deeply impacted if the wall came down, wouldn't they? So close to its border. If they're lucky, they'll flee across the ocean before it happens.
Will it happen?
Rhysand didn't break my stare. Maybe.
Why?
Because war is coming, Feyre.
Chapter 7.
War. The word clanged through me, freezing my veins.
Don't invade, I breathed. I'd get on my knees for this. I'd crawl if I had to. Don't invade, please.
Rhys cocked his head, his mouth tightening. You truly think I'm a monster, even after everything?
Please, I gasped out. They're defenseless. They won't stand a chance.
I'm not going to invade the mortal lands,
he said too quietly. I waited for him to go on, glad for the spacious room, the bright air, as the ground started to slide out from beneath me.
Put your damn shield up,
he growled. I looked inward, finding that invisible wall had dropped again. But I was so tired, and if war was coming, if my family...
Shield, now.
The raw command in his voice, the voice of the High Lord of the Night Court, had me acting on instinct, my exhausted mind building the wall brick by brick. Only when it had ensconced my mind once more did he speak, his eyes softening almost imperceptibly.
Did you think it would end with Amarantha?
Tamlin hasn't said. And why would he tell me? But there were so many patrols, so many meetings I wasn't allowed to attend. Such tension. He had to know. I needed to ask him, demand why he hadn't told me.
The King of Highburn has been planning his campaign to reclaim the world south of the wall for over 100 years,
Rhys said.
Amarantha was an experiment, a 49-year test, to see how easily and how long a territory might fall and be controlled by one of his commanders.
For an immortal, 49 years was nothing. I wouldn't have been surprised to hear he'd been planning this for far longer than a century. Will he attack Prithian first?
Prithian,
Rhys said, pointing to the map of our massive island on the table,
is all that stands between the King of Highburn and the continent. He wants to reclaim the human lands there, perhaps seize the fairy lands too. If anyone is to intercept his conquering fleet before it reaches the continent, it would be us.
I slid into one of the chairs, my knees wobbling so badly I could hardly keep upright.
He will seek to remove Prithian from his way swiftly and thoroughly,
Rhys continued,
and shatter the wall at some point in the process. There are already holes in it, though mercifully small enough to make it difficult to swiftly pass his armies through. He'll want to bring the whole thing down, and likely use the ensuing panic to his advantage.
Each breath was like swallowing glass. When is he going to attack? The wall had held steady for 5 centuries, and even then, those damned holes had allowed the foulest, hungriest fey beasts to sneak through and prey on humans. Without that wall, if Highburn was indeed to launch an assault on the human world, I wished I hadn't eaten such a large breakfast.
That is the question, he said, and why I brought you here.
I lifted my head to meet his stare. His face was drawn, but calm.
I don't know when or where he plans to attack Prithian,
Rhys went on.
I don't know who his allies here might be.
He'd have allies here?
A slow nod. Cowards who would bow and join him, rather than fight his armies again.
I could have sworn a whisper of darkness spread along the floor behind him. Did you fight in the war? For a moment, I thought he wouldn't answer, but then Rhys nodded.
I was young, by our standards, at least. But my father had sent aid to the Mortal Fairy Alliance on the continent, and I convinced him to let me take a legion of our soldiers.
He sat in the chair beside mine, gazing vacantly at the map.
I was stationed in the south, right where the fighting was thickest. The slaughter was
he chewed on the inside of his cheek.
I have no interest in ever seeing full-scale slaughter like that again.
He blinked, as if clearing the horrors from his mind.
But I don't think the King of Highburn will strike that way. Not at first. He's too smart to waste his forces here, to give the continent time to rally while we fight him. If he makes his move to destroy Prithian and the Wall, it'll be through stealth and trickery, to weaken us. Amarantha was the first part of that plan. We now have several untested High Lords, broken courts with High Priestesses angling for control like wolves around a carcass, and a people who have realized how powerless they might truly be.
Why are you telling me this? I said, my voice thin, scratchy.
It made no sense, none, that he would reveal his suspicions, his fears.
And Ianthe? She might be ambitious, but she was Tamlin's friend, my friend, of sorts. Perhaps the only ally we'd have against the other High Priestesses, Rhys's personal dislike for her or no.
I am telling you for two reasons, he said,
his face so cold, so calm, that it unnerved me as much as the news he was delivering.
One, you're close to Tamlin. He has men, but he also has long-existing ties to Highburn.
He'd never help the king, Rhys held up a hand.
I want to know if Tamlin is willing to fight with us, if he can use those connections to our advantage. As he and I have strained relations, you have the pleasure of being the go-between.
He doesn't inform me of those things.
Perhaps it's time he did. Perhaps it's time you insisted.
He examined the map, and I followed where his gaze landed, on the wall within Prithian, on the small, vulnerable, mortal territory. My mouth went dry. What is your other reason?
Rhys looked me up and down, assessing, weighing. You have a skill set that I need. Rumor has it you caught a Suriel.
It wasn't that hard.
I've tried and failed, twice. But that's a discussion for another day. I saw you trap the Middengard worm like a rabbit.
His eyes twinkled.
I need you to help me, to use those skills of yours to track down what I need.
What do you need? Whatever was tied to my reading and shielding, I'm guessing?
You'll learn of that later.
I didn't know why I'd even bothered to ask. There have to be at least a dozen other hunters more experienced and skilled.
Maybe there are, but you're the only one I trust.
I blinked. I could betray you whenever I feel like it.
You could, but you won't.
I gritted my teeth and was about to say something vicious when he added,
And then, there's the matter of your powers.
I don't have any powers.
It came out so fast that there was no chance of it sounding like anything but denial.
Rhys crossed his legs.
Don't you? The strength, the speed. If I didn't know any better, I'd say you and Tamlin were doing a very good job of pretending you're normal. That the powers you're displaying aren't usually the first indications among our kind that a High Lord's son might become his heir.
I'm not a High Lord.
No, but you were given life by all seven of us. Your very essence is tied to us, born of us. What if we gave you more than we expected?
Again, that gaze raked over me.
What if you could stand against us? Hold your own, a High Lady.
There are no High Ladies.
His brows furrowed, but he shook his head. We'll talk about that later, too. But yes, Feyre, there can be High Ladies. And perhaps you aren't one of them, but what if you were something similar? What if you were able to wield the power of the seven High Lords at once? What if you could blend into darkness, or shapeshift, or freeze over an entire room, an entire army?
The winter wind on the nearby peaks seemed to howl in answer, that thing I'd felt under my skin.
Do you understand what that might mean in an oncoming war? Do you understand how it might destroy you if you don't learn to control it?
One, stop asking so many rhetorical questions. Two, we don't know if I do have these powers.
You do. But you need to start mastering them, to learn what you inherited from us.
And I suppose you're the one to teach me, too? Reading and shielding aren't enough?
While you hunt with me for what I need, yes.
I began shaking my head. Tamlin won't allow it.
Tamlin isn't your keeper, and you know it.
I'm his subject, and he is my High Lord.
You are no one's subject.
I went rigid at the flash of teeth, the smoke-like wings that flared out.
I will say this once, and only once,
Rhysand purred, stalking to the map on the wall.
You can be a pawn, be someone's reward, and spend the rest of your immortal life bowing and scraping and pretending you're less than him, than Ianthe, than any of us. If you want to pick that road, then fine. A shame, but it's your choice.
The shadow of wings rippled again.
But I know you. More than you realize, I think. And I don't believe for one damn minute that you're remotely fine with being a pretty trophy for someone who has sat on his ass for nearly 50 years, then sat on his ass while you were shredded apart.
Stop it!
Or, he plowed ahead, you've got another choice. You can master whatever powers we gave to you and make it count. You can play a role in this war. Because war is coming, one way or another. And do not try to delude yourself that any of the Fae will give a shit about your family across the wall, when our whole territory is likely to become a charnel house.
I stared at the map, at Prithian, and that sliver of land at its southern base.
You want to save the mortal realm?
He asked.
Then become someone Prithian listens to. Become vital. Become a weapon. Because there might be a day, Feyre, when only you stand between the King of Highburn and your human family. And you do not want to be unprepared.
I lifted my gaze to him, my breath tight, aching. As if he hadn't just knocked the world from beneath my feet, Rhysand said,
think it over. Take the week. Ask Tamlin if it'll make you sleep better. See what charming Ianthe says about it. But it's your choice to make. No one else's.
I didn't see Rhysand for the rest of the week, or more. The only people I encountered were Nuala and Caradwyn, who delivered my meals, made my bed, and occasionally asked how I was faring. The only evidence I had at all that Rhys remained on the premises were the blank copies of the alphabet, along with several sentences I was to write every day, swapping out words, each one more obnoxious than the last. Rhysand is the most handsome High Lord. Rhysand is the most delightful High Lord. Rhysand is the most cunning High Lord. Every day, one miserable sentence, with one changing word of varying arrogance and vanity. And every day, another simple set of instructions. Shield up, shield down, shield up, shield down. Over and over and over. How he knew if I obeyed or not, I didn't care. But I threw myself into my lessons. I raised and lowered and thickened those mental shields, if only because it was all I had to do. My nightmares left me groggy, sweaty. But the room was so open, the starlight so bright that when I'd jerk awake, I didn't rush to the toilet. No walls pushing in around me. No inky darkness. I knew where I was, even if I resented being there. The day before our week finally finished, I was trudging to my usual little table, already grimacing at what delightful sentences I'd find waiting and all the mental acrobatics ahead, when Rhys's and Moore's voices floated toward me. It was a public space, so I didn't bother masking my footsteps as I neared where they spoke in one of the sitting areas, Rhys pacing before the open plunge off the mountain, Moore lounging in a cream-colored armchair. Asriel would want to know that. Moore was saying.
Asriel can go to hell,
Rhys sniped back.
He likely already knows anyway.
We played games the last time, Moore said with a seriousness that made me pause a healthy distance away. And we lost. Badly. We're not going to do that again.
You should be working,
was Rhysand's only response.
I gave you control for a reason, you know.
Moore's jaw tightened, and she at last faced me. She gave me a smile that was more of a cringe. Rhys turned, frowning at me.
Say what it is you came here to say, Moore,
he said tightly, resuming his pacing. Moore rolled her eyes for my benefit, but her face turned solemn as she said, There was another attack, at a temple in Cesare. Almost every priestess slain, the trove looted. Rhys halted, and I didn't know what to process, her news, or the utter rage conveyed in one word as Rhys said, "Who?" "We don't know," Moore said. "Same tracks as last time. Small group, bodies that showed signs of wounds from large blades, and no trace of where they came from and how they disappeared. No survivors. The bodies weren't even found until a day later, when a group of pilgrims came by." By the cauldron, I must have made some tiny noise, because Moore gave me a strained but sympathetic look. Rhys, though. First the shadows started, plumes of them from his back. And then, as if his rage had loosened his grip on that beast he'd once told me he hated to yield to, those wings became flesh. Great, beautiful, brutal wings, membranous and clawed like a bat's, dark as night and strong as hell. Even the way he stood seemed altered, steadier, grounded, like some final piece of him had clicked into place. But Rhysand's voice was still midnight soft, and he said, "What did Azrael have to say about it?" Again, that glance from Moore, as if unsure I should be present for whatever this conversation was. "He's pissed. Cassian even more so. He's convinced it must be one of the rogue Illyrian war bands, intent on winning new territory."
"It's something to consider," Rhys mused. "Some of the Illyrian clans gleefully bowed to Amarantha during those years. Trying to expand their borders could be their way of seeing how far they can push me and get away with it."
I hated the sound of her name, focused on it, more than the information he was allowing me to glean. "Cassian and Az are waiting." She cut herself off and gave me an apologetic wince. "They're waiting in the usual spot for your orders." Fine. That was fine. I'd seen that blank map on the wall. I was an enemy's bride. Even mentioning where his forces were stationed, what they were up to, might be dangerous. I had no idea where Cesare even was. What it was, actually. Rhys studied the open air again, the howling wind that shoved dark, roiling clouds over the distant peaks. Good weather, I realized, for flying. "Winnowing in would be easier," Moore said, following the High Lord's gaze.
"Tell the pricks I'll be there in a few hours,"
he merely said. Moore gave me a wary grin and vanished. I studied the empty space where she'd been, not a trace of her left behind. "How does that vanishing work?" I said softly. I'd seen only a few High Fae do it, and no one had ever explained. Rhys didn't look at me, but he said,
"Winnowing. Think of it as two different points on a piece of cloth. One point is your current place in the world. The other one across the cloth is where you want to go. Winnowing. It's like folding that cloth so the two spots align. The magic does the folding, and all we do is take a step to get from one place to another. Sometimes it's a long step, and you can feel the dark fabric of the world as you pass through it. A shorter step, let's say, from one end of the room to the other, would barely register. It's a rare gift, and a helpful one, though only the stronger Fae can do it. The more powerful you are, the farther you can jump between places in